Welcome to Bigfoot Notes from the Field. I'm your host, William Jevning. Let me go over a few things briefly, folks, before we get started with this evening's show. If anybody hasn't seen my website yet, williamjevning.com, I encourage everyone to go there. On the website, we have the blog, our newsletter. This radio show is posted there. We have our research teams around the country and internationally, and my online store. And if you want to check out our Facebook group page, it's JRG Bigfoot research page. I think we have around 950 members there now, so it's a place you can go without all the silliness that a lot of Bigfoot groups put out there. So, and this show, depending on how you're listening, is on a number of different platforms. It's on Podbean, Blog Talk Radio, SoundCloud, and Stitcher Radio, and I'm getting ready to put it on Google Play. So that's pretty much it for now. If you're a witness out there, I am going to be starting another podcast very soon. This is the free one. I'm going to have a premium podcast. If you're a witness and are, would be willing to discuss your encounter with me, get a hold of me at my personal email, williamjevning@yahoo.com. It's all very confidential. I can even disguise your voice if you wish that. So let's go ahead and get started, folks. We have Jeremiah Fountain, Northeastern Regional Director, Chance Honeycutt, one of our team leaders. Shane Church is one of our team leaders. And I think Joe DeHoyos is our Southwest Regional Director, if Joe can get on.
How you doing, guys?
We're going to do a roundtable discussion tonight on Bigfoot and the media. And if we stray off that topic, we do. That's sort of the way we go. But so, fellas, how are you this evening?
Good. Good. Yeah. Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Okay. Let's, Jeremiah, let's start with you. Let's get a little update from the field. I know you had some stuff going on, you and Don in Maine. If you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. As I told you, as you guys know, I had that encounter, on one of our properties up here in upstate New York. You know, I'm not going to say exactly where, but it's a hot spot that I've worked for years. Every couple of years they come around. Like I said, I had that sighting weeks ago. Hearing a lot of vocalizations, I got that one recorded in a really nice howl last week. Sent that to Shane and he isolated it for me, and I believe I emailed it to all you guys, didn't I? Last night it was a really really strange evening. My girlfriend and I were sleeping, and about 4:30 a.m. just a god-awful scream woke us right up, to be honest with you. Woke her up first, and she woke me up, and after that first initial one there was four or five more, and they were a tad bit different. I really couldn't tell if it was the same one changing its tone or it was a different one. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm definitive on, one particular, stance on it or the other. But, like I said, it followed up with four more vocalizations. So, I moved as fast as I could to get the recorder and record it. And in that kind of situation, my hands were just shaking, trying to threw that recorder on, and once I got it on, luckily, it bellowed out four more, and I was able to get those recorded, fortunately. Shane, I did send those to you today.
Okay.
So you could, if you could isolate them a little bit, maybe.
Sure.
Thing with those, they're a little bit further away than the last ones I gave you, and I did record them. I stuck the recorder out the window, because we were sleeping and we were in our room, but they are on there. You can hear them. They're pretty good. They're long, real long vocalizations. But okay. I listen to you and do your thing. You're good. That's not all. Right after that, we kind of drifted back to sleep and and something was on the wall, on the siding outside. To be honest with you, it sounded like a knuckle. Tap, 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 tap.
On the side of the building.
That's right. Yeah. Right outside of our room. You know what I mean? Like, the siding right outside of our room. It didn't go all the way down, but it was like it concentrated on our room, which was very creepy. And after that, it seemed, what we heard next was extremely creepy. It was bipedal footsteps. We could hear it across. That on one side of us to the left, and then I heard another set on my side. Stacy heard hers first on the left. She made me aware of it, and you could hear it. That was a little bit more faint, and then the ones on my side. So yeah, I've been having a lot of action on that piece of property, you know. So
man,
yeah, very
active. We weren't able to get Don on this evening, but he's been having a lot of activity also, very similar kind of activity.
Very, very similar.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he was talking about putting up game cams around his house and whatnot. So
he did today, actually. Yeah. And one more thing I wanted to add about my activity. It's always from 3 to 5 a.m.
Yeah, that's about the right time. That's when they're feeding.
Always from 3 to 5 a.m. And you know what's interesting, guys? I've got a ton of deer on that property, but this year, what they're doing is they're bedding right outside the house, right up close. That makes me wonder, are they coming closer to to us as people to get away from these things?
Is that pretty unusual compared to past years?
Very unusual. Very unusual. They never come that close. They have never come that close to the house. Never.
I know I brought this up with you.
Yeah.
You know, not too long ago. I almost wonder if maybe it's, you know, there's change in migration patterns, you know, of the local wildlife too, that might play, you know, a part of that as well. Maybe they're coming in, you know, closer, following, you know, their food trail as well.
It could be, you know, and like, yeah, Chance, and like I told you on the phone that day, and I said this to you, Will, several times, on that particular, on our particular properties, you know, and Will, I told you the locations, I don't need to say them out loud, but mm-hmm. It seems like every 3 years, they're coming through. You know, and it's always in the fall, always. When I do my research in the fall, I always get my best results in the fall time. Always.
Well, there's a reason for that, and we've seen this happen for many, many, many years in many locations. And I always go back to the Bluff Creek area back in the 60s, for instance. A lot of people, it's never been really articulated in the public, but if you go back and look at when things were being seen, it wasn't all the time, it wasn't every year, it was once about every 3 or 4 years that they would come through and they would find tracks and all that. So what happens is, depending on, you know, the particular group's range, let's say your area happens to be where they come through cyclically every year during that particular time of year. That's they move on a almost a regular basis throughout their range, and they're in areas, you know, depending on feeding, typically about 14 days or so, then they move on to the next feeding area. So depending on the size of that range is usually when they're going to be in a particular area. And you know, they may be in that area every single year, but they come at, right, near your place about every 3 years. The other 2 years, they might be 5 miles away, 10 miles away. They're in the same part of their range, but they're just in a different feeding area.
Right, you know, and you know, I found, I don't know if I sent you guys a picture of that footprint in the mud, and that was extremely close to the house. It's about a 17-inch footprint. I'll send it to you guys again. I don't know if I sent it. I think I sent it to you, Will. Is that,
right. I'd like to see that, yeah.
Very, very close to that. Very unnerving, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, Don, like you said, oh, go ahead, Will.
That's not unusual behavior. We've seen that happening a lot. And again, the fall is the high time for behavioral activity throughout the year. It seems to be the most active. It's when the most reports are coming out. People are seeing these things. So, and again, Don's experience right now is the almost exactly what's going on in your place.
Right. Yep. And you know, Don had that. He had the sighting. He had was pretty. It was the same week I had mine, if I'm not mistaken. Well, wasn't it?
It was right.
Same week I had mine. I don't know if you heard about Don's sighting, Shane. Did you? He saw, you know, he saw the outline of this thing, and he saw the eyes. He said the eyes were just extremely unnerving. Gave him a look, you know. He said when he saw that thing, kind of squint its eyes, and it gave him a look like, you know, I'm the alpha out of the two of us. stay away, and you know, this is my territory. You know,
a little bit of sizing up action, you know.
I think that's exactly what it was. I'm sure you'll agree on this, Will. I don't think he's got these things around, and you know, I've got them around right now. I don't think it's curiosity.
No, you know, everything they do is, and here's the thing about Sasquatches is, and it goes back, we've talked about this before, the high caloric intake that they require for daily survival means that most of their behavior, and I mean probably 98-99% of their behavior revolves around feeding.
Right.
So if they're coming around somebody's home, look at the food sources. What do they need? Are they able to get something there? You can almost guarantee that's what it's going to be involving.
And do you think that that spring I've got on the property is a big big thing too for the
water source? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a beautiful spring. Great water.
And
you know, it's
and what's around water. What's around water? All animals come around water sources for water and other food sources. So the predators are going to follow the game, which is attracted to water sources.
Yep. Right. Like Will was saying, I'm sure, you know, there's a game show that runs right across that spring, too, for the water.
There is. I've got a tree stand there, actually. You know, I've harvested a lot of big bucks out of that, right off that that pond, you know. It's interesting, you know what I mean?
You'll have to definitely keep us updated on what's going on there and anything further.
Yeah, you're like right in the middle of it, man. It's just amazing.
Yeah, right now I am. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool, but it's unnerving at the same time.
Right.
Let's go ahead and delve into the subject chose for this evening, and it's Bigfoot and the media. And you know, I know from my own personal opinion, I'm not real impressed with a lot of what the media puts out in terms of the subject of Bigfoot. But to be fair to TV and film producers, I really don't think most of them are that familiar with the subject. I mean, I know from personal experience dealing with television producers, for instance, that they simply go online and see what's out there, and then they pick and choose from the stuff that happens to be out there, which doesn't mean it's any good or bad. It's just what's there, and they sort of pick and choose what they like from what's available. So, Jeremiah, let's start with you. Will, give us your thoughts on how the media portrays the subject.
Yeah, sure. We were actually talking about this last night. My opinion is that, you know, the media, the news especially, you know, you see there's a sighting somewhere, you know, if the local news in the area, you know, from what I've seen, when they get a hold of it, they humorize it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's usually a joke.
Yeah.
There's usually a snicker somewhere in there, you know, it's tiny.
Yeah. They humorize it, and it's almost degrading, to be honest with you. It makes the rest of us look like jerks, to be honest with you. That's just my opinion. You know, that's what I've seen throughout the years. You know, the humorizer.
Chance, what are your opinions?
Just kind of going off what Jeremiah was saying, you know, as well with, you know, the news portion of it. And again, you know, of course, this is, you know, just my opinion. It seems like if it's not being, you know, the humor factor of it, it's almost just used as, you know, a fluff piece, if you will, you know, to kind of fill the last, you know, 2 minutes or so, you know, of the news segment for that time, you know, which isn't necessarily, you know, a good or bad thing. But also to play devil's advocate, you know, when you only really have, you know, 2 minutes to fill of a, as a fluff piece, you know, it does make it difficult, you know, for, you know, the real researchers that are out there, you know, to present solid, you know, facts and findings, you know, of all the man hours and the time that we put out in the field, you know, to present solid facts and findings to people that might not have as much knowledge about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of times it's never intended to be a serious piece. It's, you know, and again, you know, being fair to the reporters or producers or whoever is putting that piece into a media presentation, you know, either doesn't know anything about the subject or, you know, has gotten an opinion from something else. You know, I mean, what we have in our frame of reference is what we pick up. So, Joe, how about you? What are your thoughts?
I think I echo everyone else's. You know, it's always just used as a humor piece at the end of the news, and just like Chance was saying, just like a fluff piece. You know, there's never any really seriousness taken with the subject.
How about you, Shane? What are your thoughts?
Okay, so like, as far as like fluff pieces goes, yeah, that seems to be. But if you take it, you know, like Minerva, if they have a sighting or whatnot, you know, they've got a history of a story. So it's almost like they're okay with it because it's, you know, it's going to bring money to their city or what, so on and so forth. Maybe even like Falk. Over here in Lake Worth, there's the Lake Worth Monster. I mean, you don't ever see anything like that because, I mean, it's so developed over there. All the woods are kind of diminished. My mountain bike out there at Sansa Park, and there's no way in hell anything could exist out there. There's no deer. I don't see no scat, anything like that. So, you know, they would never report anything like that. But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of fluff pieces. There's a lot of snickers and smirks, but you know what, when I see these kinds of reports, basically I just want the news person to get the hell out of the way and then get to the witness and just kind of
go directly to the witness.
Just kind of see where they're at, and you know, of course they're only going to edit and show you what they think the story should be, but I mean, you can get an inkling of kind of where they're coming from, you know.
In recent times, and I mean the past few years, we've seen an upswing in interest in the subject in the media. I guess most notably would be shows, you know, Animal Planet's Finding Bigfoot and Mountain Monsters, and I think there's something in Alaska and a couple of these. And occasionally, you know, we'll see a documentary or something, you know, like there's some guy now, I don't know, never heard of the guy out looking for the Yeti. you know, and it seems to be, I think it's Discovery is primarily, you know, the network that's kind of has an interest and does this. What do you guys think that, I mean, do you think that brings more notoriety to the subject? I mean, it certainly gives more exposure to people, but what are your thoughts on what it does to the subject as a whole and us as serious researchers in it? Shane, what do you think?
I think it kind of makes a joke out of us. Like, as far as, like, finding Bigfoot goes, I mean, my wife makes fun of that shit all the time, but even me personally, if I watch it, I fast-forward it just to the town meeting. The town hall meeting, because I just want to see where the public that lives in these areas, what's happening to them, and they speak. And after that's kind of over, I'm done. I'm checked out. I don't want to see Matt fucking skipping around doing jump rope shit or whatever. You know, Bobo gonna baby Ruth up his ass and saying, you know, whatever. I don't want to see any of that stuff. Just right. Give me some town hall meeting. Give me some real people. What you got? Okay, I'm done.
Right.
That's
right.
You know.
Welcome to us. KD joined us. He's our man with the science background. So we're just in the middle of discussing. We talked about, of course, you know, originally we were talking about like newspaper reports and TV reports with little pieces at the end sometimes. As Chance brought up, usually they could add it as fluff, you know, if they're running short, maybe on news items or something. And I mentioned just briefly, and Shane discussed his thoughts on, you know, popular, the subject has become very popular in the past few years, even more so than it was before. But we get shows like Finding Bigfoot and Mountain Monsters and whatever's going on in Alaska. And do you think, what are your thoughts on it? Does it provide more information to the public, or does it do a disservice to people like us that are serious about looking into it? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I see those shows as, you know, I think there's good and bad to them. I mean, I don't necessarily see them as a negative. I mean, you know, it definitely brings attention, I think, to the subject. And I think if you can bring some people in more of the entertainment sense, I mean, I don't think anybody watches those and actually thinks they're going to find Bigfoot, you know. But,
well, certainly not shows like Mountain Monsters.
Well, no, of course not. Of course not. You know, and I think you know, it can definitely bring some people the attention to it who might not have ever thought twice about it. And in an entertainment sense, there's not necessarily the pressure or the pushback you get when you talk to a lot of people seriously about it, or try to, you know, with an anger sometimes, and you know. Or ridicule on their part towards you. So, I mean, I see the good and bad. I think that, like, you know, Cliff on Finding Bigfoot, that guy, I think, is a genuine guy. And I don't know. I think everybody in this field, I mean, there's obviously the two camps. There's the ones that go more paranormal. There's the ones that are saying, hey, this thing's flesh and blood. And, you know, I might agree with one over the other, but I see value in their work. But...
Okay, Joe... Oh, go ahead.
Last thing I'll say on that, you know, but with that said, I do think it brings a negative aspect to a lot of it, because that's what most people are going to go to when they're talking or when they're thinking about people taking it seriously. There's good to, you know...
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a double-edged sword with some of these shows. Joe, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think there's a lot more positive than what people give it credit for. You know, like, hear so many witnesses talk about how the whole reason why they came forward is because they started watching these shows. And you hear other people say the reason why they got interested in Bigfoot was because they started watching these, you know, shows on television. And... or you hear people say that that's what got them wondering if that's what they had on their property from, you know, from the things that they saw on these shows. So I think it does a lot more good, I think, than bad. And I don't think, you know, maybe they deserve a little bit more credit, even though it is what it is, entertainment.
Sure. And one of the things I hear from a lot of people is they'll listen, or they like the first part of the show with the witness.
Yeah.
And then when it goes to what the crew does, they tune out. So, Chance, what are your thoughts?
Kind of just to tie in what, you know, Katie and Joe are saying, there's definitely parts of it and different aspects of it that I do really enjoy. If nothing else, I can definitely enjoy and appreciate the fact that, you know, with it being, you know, such a big cable show, that it's, you know, reaching such a great audience, and kind of bringing just the topic in general, you know, kind of out in the public even more, and just, you know, not even that, but just, you know, quicker than, you know, other groups might be able to, because it's, you know, boom, right there in your face.
Right,
you know,
right.
For if nothing else, I can definitely appreciate, like I said, just the fact that it's, you know, for lack of a better term, from coast to coast, you know, it's reaching so many people and bringing, you know, the topic to light and like I said, just right there in your face. Now when it comes to, you know, their methodology and, you know, the way they go about it, I tend to not necessarily agree with all of their methods and tactics. But like I said, I can definitely appreciate it, you know, for what it is, you know, bringing it to such a big platform, so to speak, I guess. You know, and I always definitely enjoy just hearing what, you know, the local residents of each area they have in, that they go to see, you know, I just have to say about the topic. And it's always interesting to hear the witness encounters on that end.
And that's true. I agree. I mean, and having done radio for a few years and interviewed a lot of people, witnesses, listeners out there, you know, in the audience really appreciate, you know, hearing these stories. And it does encourage other people who might not otherwise, you know, share their experience to bring it out. And a lot of times those experiences, when they, when they're put on a radio show or let's say a television show, makes people who might be reticent to bring a story out more comfortable doing so. Jeremiah, what do you think about all these TV shows and such?
You know, you got your good and your bad. As far as good, it is gonna bring more people forward. You know, maybe people that didn't want to talk about their experiences before are gonna come forward. You know, it's gonna make them more comfortable. You know, to see there's other people out there that have been through the same thing. It's gonna make them more comfortable coming forward. You know, and also, you know, every once in a while, you know, you'll see a documentary that's not so bad, you know, as far as some of the stuff they feature in it. And that, you know, and with some of the information in it, you know, like I said, not that bad. You know, and as far as the show, like, as far as, you're going to have to pardon me if I get a little too blunt here, but.
Go right ahead, Jeremiah.
As far as the Finding Bigfoot show, I have no respect for them. I think they're a joke. Their tactics, their methods, you know, I just have no respect. They're going to get somebody killed. You know, people are going to go around. People think these people are the almighty Bigfoot gods, the almighty experts. You know, so you've got them passing their tactics down to everybody. These people are going to go out, try to do what they learned from Matt Moneymaker. You've got little Matt Moneymakers running around. You know, I mean, I don't know. I think the show is a joke. It's total BS.
Well, that definitely,
you know,
yeah, that definitely brings something to mind. Now, great points, fellas. You know, when it does, in terms of exposure for the subject. I know I looked a few years back, and I don't know what the statistics are currently, but about 3 or 4 years ago, I think Finding Bigfoot had about 1.6 million viewers, something like that, which is great in terms of, you know, sort of exposing the subject to the public, getting more awareness. But then shows like, I mean, that one, and I agree, you know, their methodology is certainly, and I'll let me give you the. What our forensic anthropologist Mark Dobbs, and Mark was going to try to be with us tonight, but he's been ill lately, so he's not going to make an appearance until he feels better. But when I first met Mark, he told me that he was teaching anthropology in one of the colleges here in the Bay Area of Northern California, and he said he used the show Finding Bigfoot as an example to his students of bad science.
That's good. That's good.
Can't argue that.
So, and again, it is that double-edged sword. On one hand, yes, we do have the exposure, but on the other hand, now 1.6 million viewers, let's say that's what it is or it was at that time, that's a large audience. But what's the, you know, if you look at the ripple effect, so to speak,
right.
from a show like that, what kind of perception do you think that puts in the public mind? Is it a good one? Is it a negative one? I mean, the witnesses. Now, the witnesses are great. That's a great part of the show. That's the only thing that really, in my opinion, keeps that show going.
I agree.
In terms of what they do is absolute nonsense. Right. But that's my opinion. So, right. Shane, let's go ahead and go to you. What are your thoughts? I mean, how do you think that show and other ones like it impact the people out there in terms of how they view the subject?
Well, I know that as far as Finding Bigfoot goes, I could probably watch the whole season. Just the town hall meetings would be like, what, 30 minutes for the whole season, you know, just getting what they're saying. And then you got the yo-yos going out into the friggin' woods doing, you know, what they're doing. And yep. So everybody's going to be like, oh, well, let's get a bunch of Girl Scouts and Twizzlers and shit and beat some drums and, you know, what the, you're going to scare everything, rabbits, all that shit. They're all going to cruise, you know? And,
yeah, right. Well, now that's the point. Now, besides the net effect of what you're getting from going out there, making a bunch of noise and being very visible, both visually and audibly. And we know what wildlife does, you know, with that kind of noise and everything, right. Is it drives them away. It scares them away. And on the other hand, you know, the subject is very intangible. This is a tough subject. Anybody thinks they want to be a Sasquatch hunter, you know, I've done this in December. It'll be 44 years, the same number of years Renee DeHinden spent in the subject. And I'll tell you what, you go long and through some very difficult stuff before, between times that you find things. It's not like you can go out in your backyard and find a Bigfoot.
Right.
So these guys, what they do is... And it's kind of a shotgun approach. You ever notice they try all these different things? That means they don't know what they're doing when they try all kinds of different things. That's, if people want to know that, that's a clear sign that when somebody doesn't know what they're doing, they're experimenting. They're experimenting on television, hoping one of these things will work.
And then Mountain Monsters is just a joke, man.
I only saw a part of that show one time, and I couldn't go beyond that because one of the guys was under a tree.
I remember that.
Bigfoot or whatever was in the tree, and it was peeing on his face, and he just stood there griping about it. I'm thinking, well, if something's peeing on me, I'm not going to stand there.
Right?
I'm gonna get the hell out of the way. You know, I'm not going to stand there and complain about the thing peeing on me. I mean, for crying out loud.
Between all those guys together, there's not a full set of teeth. You know what I mean? No.
There's really not.
So again, that goes back to the image of the subject, and that's kind of the point I was, you know, trying to get to. Well, what do you think it does to the subject, to all the other people out there?
It just makes it a joke, man. It's a joke.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, having, you know, Finding Bigfoot or Mountain Monsters represent the science behind this subject is like having Scooby Doo represent detective work.
There you go.
That's
great.
You
know? I love it.
So
perfect.
I think if people, you know, the entertainment aspect, and I mean, I don't want to attack those people personally. I mean, they have producers involved and stuff, you know?
True.
So I think if you take it for what it is as an entertainment source, then, you know, okay. Now, what Jeremiah said, I think makes sense. Hey, is there the person that's going to watch what they're doing and try to do it? And, you know, get themselves hurt. I mean, well, yeah. I mean, look what happened to Timothy Treadwell trying to film bears. If you remember that, he got himself eaten.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Exactly.
I mean, yes. Yeah.
How about you, Joe? What are your thoughts? Joe, you still there?
I think we lost Joe.
Okay, Chance, what do you think?
You know, I mean, it's when you get that deep into it, you know, like everybody was saying, you know, when you get out there in the woods, you know, Will, just kind of to touch on, you know, what you were saying, when you're making that much noise, you know, everything, you know, within a mile around you is going to hear what you're doing, and it's, you know, all just going to kind of, you know, dissipate. And then, you know, inevitably you run into every twig snap, every tree branch on the shows, you know, is, do you guys hear that? That was a Bigfoot, you know?
When you know if there was a Sasquatch there, it would have been running for the hills, you know, as soon as they got out there.
Exactly.
I think, you know, I think you also have to think about it. I think the majority of encounters that people have are going to be by chance. And I don't think most people are sneaking around either. You know, I mean, who knows what people were doing prior to leading up to that, you know? But yeah, definitely, you know, playing music and having a disco ball going.
Let me relate a story to you that was kind of along those lines, and it has some direct bearing on the show Finding Bigfoot. This was back in 2012. I knew a gentleman who was a big game hunter and guide, and he was telling me one time that his 80-year-old father was sitting. They were sitting outside in the front yard in a small town in Wisconsin, and his father picks up this 2x4 and starts smacking it on the wooden fence. And he does this, and this is like what they were doing on the show Finding Bigfoot. And pretty soon, he gets a response. So my friend was wondering just what was going on here, so he decided to take a walk, and he walked around the block behind their home. And here was another old gentleman sitting in his chair in the yard with a 2x4 peg. So there was this wood knocking going on in the town.
I'm sure that's what's going on out in, you know, like Salt Fork. There's all these people going out doing the same thing. And, you know, a lot of your Bigfoot calls are probably Joe calling you back thinking he's talking to one of these things as well, you know.
Right. And I mean, you know, not only that, I mean, you know, some of the stuff they do is just, you know, outright silly and, quite frankly, I mean, dangerous. And like Jeremiah said, it's going to end up getting, you know, somebody hurt, especially if it's, you know, a brand new, you know, newcomer to the field where their only, you know, real interaction is, you know, what they see, you know, Moneymaker and all these other guys doing. You know, they're going to, oh, well, you know, I can do that by myself and, you know, go out tromping around in the woods. And, you know, next thing they know, they have, you know, a legitimate encounter and you're just not prepared for what you're dealing with.
Chance, you hit it right on the head. And here's the issue. Now, shows like, you know, Mountain Monsters and a couple others, you know, are pretty obvious as they're just humorous.
Right.
I don't know that too many people take those seriously. However, shows like Finding Bigfoot, a lot of people take that seriously. Sure. And I've actually had some arguments with people, even radio show hosts, you know, who talked about their experience with wood knocks and things, you know, even though they didn't go beyond where they were standing to investigate to see what was making that noise, in which most people, you know, make these claims, never go actually search to see what it was, what the source of that noise was. You know, so I provided some alternative explanations, and of course they dig their heels in and don't want to accept alternative explanations. They just want to hear that was Bigfoot because that's what they talk about in this TV show. Yeah. Let's be real. So here's the problem, as Chance brought up, and it's a tough one because we know these creatures are predatory animals. And it goes back to one of the reasons they're not seen that often, or they're very difficult for us to get to prove they're real, is the fact that they are most likely an apex predator. Most of their behavior is involved in feeding, and as we know with most predatory animals, such as, you know, cougars and such, are very difficult to find out in the wild because they're engaged in that same behavior. They don't want to be detected. Detection means you're going to miss out on the meal. Or it could be some kind of danger involved to them. So they're always involved in very stealthy behavior. So for the person who out there, you know, happens to have a chance encounter for whatever reason with one or more of these creatures and are totally unaware of the true nature of their behavior, you know, because they've seen what's on Finding Bigfoot and think that's the way to behave, could certainly be setting themselves up for a very dangerous situation.
Sure.
Shane, what do you think about that?
What I was thinking about was last night, me and Jeremiah were kind of talking about Mohawk Indians.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Okay, now as far as, like, the real people of the land go, like Indians and whatnot. I mean, you barely ever see them in the media, period. And to me, like, having a connection with like Jeremiah kind of has is like getting the down to earth bone truth of what's going on out there. I mean, they've got history painted in caves and whatnot and stuff. And as far as the media goes, you know, they just kind of like pick and poke who's the local yokel of the month to, you know, whatever on the subject. But I think if, which, you know, a lot of tribes and stuff aren't going to be open to the media anyways, but I mean, I think they're like the real conducive mediator between us and really knowing some real knowledge of what the hell's going on out there, you know?
And let me throw this out real quick, and then we'll continue discussion on that. One of the things, and this goes, I think, with social media, there are some people out there, and it's not the majority of people involved in the subject are interested in it. There's just a certain percentage, that's a relatively small percentage, of people that try to use Native American information to say that, oh, they're friendly, they're our big brothers, and all this. And I know from doing research, when I wrote Notes from the Field back in, you know, prior to, I started from 2002 to and published 2010, going over what hundreds of tribal groups told me, there were only maybe a small handful. I mean, I could count the number on one hand, probably, of you know, tribal sources that would say something like that, that was, you know, referred to them as a big brother or something like that. The vast majority were nothing like that. They were actually very, you know, in terms of cannibalistic, eating people, dangerous.
Yeah.
Lots of that kind of stuff. I mean, overwhelmingly so. What do you guys think?
Right.
I mean, is it the media or people in social media that are trying to paint the wrong picture?
Yes, I think so. Well, you know, I know, you know, I've talked to many natives, you know, including my grandmother, and I know for a fact, you know, the Iroquois, the whole, not just the Mohawks, but the whole Iroquois, you know, nation, you know, they looked at them as extremely dangerous. They were known to take children, women, and not for the sexual purposes, as everyone, certain people would think, but for food, period.
Right, which goes back to what do predators do? They go after the young, the old, and the sick.
Right, and also, they will tell you, Mohawks will tell you, that these things are not Big Brother. They are not some sort of fairy that wants to trade gifts with you. They trade gifts with the fire. They're an animal, just like the bear, just like the deer, just like the beaver. You know, they're an animal. And if you really dig deep and do research, you'll find that a lot of tribes tried to cleanse these things out for what they...
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And when you go back and look at, you know, European history, there are stories where similar things went on there. It was, and even places, now we have people in India now, and I'll tell you from a conversation I've had with one gentleman, apparently people in India, this is very common over there, but because human life is not valued like it is elsewhere, because of the huge population and a lot of places are very poor. So lots of people come up missing over there, lots of them. Mm. But they don't really care. And they know what's taking them. It's the Yeti. And there's many other names there, but there's a ballpark term. And it's as food,
yep.
Plain and simple. And there are places even, I was told by this gentleman that their military, and we know the military is very highly trained in India. You know, many people in the West may not think
so.
Oh,
it is, yeah.
But, you know, the Chinese military is certainly has a great deal of respect for the Indian military because they are very highly trained. Mm-hmm. And there are places in India where the military won't go because these things are so dangerous. And so they say they're more afraid of these things than they are tigers.
That's saying something.
Wow.
And that's saying something.
Right. Tigers don't have thumbs.
So again, right. So it goes back to the question. I mean, do a lot of these shows, I mean, do they do a disservice? I mean, they get exposure, but are they doing a disservice to the topic in general?
I think so.
I think so too.
Katie, what do you think?
Well, I think the you also have to look at who's willing to come on a show like that. I think a lot of, there's some legitimate serious people that, you know, tell their encounters there, but you know, I don't know that I'd go as far to say that it's intentional to make a joke of it, but when people talk about it, newscasters or, you know, whatever, it's joked about because anyone who takes it seriously is shunned, you know? And I think you attract a certain type of person a lot of times that's willing to just throw themselves out. Probably not think of consequences of their story or not think it through. And then that piece of them, and then that becomes a reputation.
I think we're losing a little audio there, Katie.
Yeah. Sorry? Can you hear me now?
I think you're right. I think when I interview people, especially on radio, I always have to wonder, you know, what's the motivation for wanting to tell your story? Now, a lot of times people just want to get it off their chest, and I've interviewed a lot of people that would never go on a show. Had some really very frightening encounters. In fact, I've got a few that are very detailed that were sent to me, but the witnesses would never discuss it openly. They just wanted to get it off their chest with someone. Now, to me, that's very legitimate. Uh-huh. But if somebody wants to, you know, is really pushing to go on all sorts of radio stations or television or wherever to tell their story, I have to wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, especially right. with a subject that just has a certain ridicule factor attached to it, or at least a perception of that in the public.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how often... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, people think we make money as researchers, they're sorely mistaken.
Right. Well, and that's exactly it. I mean, it's not... If you're going to get in this to make money, you're in the wrong profession.
Yeah.
Let me ask this question. What do you guys think should be in the media in terms of this subject? Jeremiah, what are your thoughts?
Reality. You know, straight up. Exactly what we know. That these things are, they are an animal. They are an apex predator. Just straight up what they are. Not a big joke. Like they're seen as that, like it's all, like the whole topic is seen as now. It should be reality, you know, not some big joke, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Shane, how do you think the subject ought to be portrayed in the media?
Okay, well...
How would you do it?
Okay, how I would do it, I really can't answer that great, but what I do know is that Monster Quest was on for a good run. So you've got producers and those that run channels targeting a demographic, which is what Finding Bigfoot did, and they did it pretty good because there's this demographic of people that are watching it, they're marketing to them, they're buying their swag, you know, there's people wearing BFRO beanies and whatnot, and then from that you got Destination America with the mountain monsters and stuff, so, you know, it's a big money-making scheme, and then for people like us that are really, you know, our hearts are into it and we just want to see real stuff, we have to deal with that demographic that's been coached into seeing and perceiving what they've seen on TV. As far as how I would do it is like what Jeremiah said, man, like strap a camera on me. If I get close enough, good for me. I got close enough and you can see this thing or hear this thing or whatever. You know, maybe I get my arm ripped off while I'm filming it.
Exactly.
I don't know.
That wouldn't be a good thing.
It wouldn't be. Damn it, if I can make it back, Katie, man, that would be great.
Right. Come on out.
Katie, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think the media today is a joke anyway. I mean, I don't really take anything I hear out there, you know, at face value. But I think there's a point to be made when you look at how Finding Bigfoot is on season whatever, you know. I don't watch a show, but I've seen it, you know, or that Monster Quest was on for so long, or anything paranormal. when we were kids, we had Unsolved Mysteries and InterGov and History Mysteries, and that was like it, you know? Now every channel has their own show. And so the fact that people make money on it shows that there's public interest. So I think, just by putting out serious things, I think that's the way to do it. I mean, if you listen to any interviews out there, the majority of researchers are on the defensive the entire time. I've heard time after time where they coax them in and bring them in. Oh, like it's safe. Give her your story. And then they start doing it and you're ambushed or, you know.
It's kind of the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
It is. Just redundant.
Bring in just an air of seriousness. I mean, look, I've never had an encounter. There's out. I think it's.
I think we're.
Are you losing me?
Well, I think we're
breaking up
a little bit there.
Am I still breaking up?
Now we can hear you now.
What I was just saying is, I mean, I've never had an encounter, but I've seen a lot of things. You know, a lot of evidence. Will shared some stunning things with me. Tells me there's something out there. And I think that as long as you try to stay curious about the subject, avoid some of the pitfalls.
You know, I think that's my issue with a lot of what's out there. And I remember back, you know, in the 70s when there were shows like In Search Of and Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious Universe. I think those were pretty good shows. Although Arthur C. Clarke always had his own little kind of a smart alecky response at the end of each of the episodes. But other than that, it was presented very well. It was documentary style, and it was just presented. Yeah. There wasn't silliness surrounding it. I mean, now, and I'll put this out there, you know, for people listening, when you look at these shows, these people make a lot of claims, but you never see any evidence, ever. Or it's very poor quality, or it's questionable, whatever they're claiming is evidence. There's a ton of evidence on this subject. And you gentlemen know that, I know you guys have some, I have a bunch of it, really high quality stuff.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's what ought to be out there. I mean, a good show, a really great show, if TV producers wanted a great show, they would recreate something like In Search Of.
Right.
And a lot of this really high quality stuff that we possess could be put on there. And you guys know I've got a great picture, a really clear one of a Sasquatch. Absolutely. Granted, it's not a frontal view; it's walking away. But it's every bit as good as the Patterson film, if not higher quality.
Yeah,
it's higher quality. That's for sure.
We don't know what's on the film that we recently got yet, and I'll be sending that to you, KD, here soon. We've got a ton of footprints. We've got a lot of other evidence, handprints, territory markings, things like that. Scat. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I think that the average public would love to see, and that could be provided. But it always makes me wonder why, somebody in the media doesn't try to put something on with that evidence. And they would have a huge audience. I mean, a million and a half people would be nothing. They could have 5 or 6 million on a show like that. So, I mean, I don't know. Chance, what are your thoughts? What do you think? What would you like to see on TV? How would you like to see the subject portrayed?
Well, I mean, just in kind of my experience when I've, you know, in dealing with it when I have interviewed, some of the people that think they're, you know, these creatures are, you know, the big brothers of the woods or, you know, the fairy type people, you know, it's always, you know, kind of intrigued me a little bit in the back of my mind. But what I have found, you know, after, you know, the more I talk to these folks, you know, there's, you know, just like Will, like you do, and like Jeremiah does, you know, there's kind of certain things I listen for and certain questions that I'll ask, you know, and, you know, 99% of the time, if you ask, you know, just the right question to these guys, you know, you'll end up finding out that these guys, you know, that think they're the big brother creatures or, you know, the fairies of the forest or whatever. These are the guys that, you know, they've never spent a day out, you know, doing real research. They've never, you know, put in the man hours, so to speak, you know, digging in and, you know, doing any research or investigating on their own. It's all been, you know, from a computer screen or, you know, something they picked up at a bookstore that they've read from somebody else.
Armchair research.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
they're armchair research.
I think, you know, Will, you've mentioned it. I think you've referred to it before as, you know, armrest quarterbacking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, exactly. You know, it's, and like I said, you know, 99% of the time, you know, none of these guys have put in, you know, any effort getting out into the field. You know, so just, you know, to piggyback off of what Jeremiah was saying, you know, it's the only, you know, what I would like to see is, you know, solid fact-based, you know, evidence, you know, presented in, you know, a genuine manner.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the witness accounts are interesting, and they're great for radio.
Absolutely.
But if you're going to put something on, television, I think you have to go the next step. I mean, you know, audiences are really, and I'm speaking to the people who are more what I call skeptics, not debunkers, not believers. That group I'm talking about, the average person out there, the vast majority of people who, you know, if they see something, they might be inclined to say, "Wait, that's very possible." Or, you know, if it's shown and presented that way, I mean, you can have the witness accounts, but in the end, all you're left with is a story. No matter how interesting, it's still a story. People want to see
exactly, which is why I think it's, you know, so important, you know, to present, you know, the evidence, whether it be in form of, you know, pictures or castings or, you know, what have you, instead of just, you know, stuff you may have read or encounters or whatever. You need to have, you know, the actual fact-based evidence.
You got to have something to back
exactly
up the story.
And also, I think, I just wanted to add, okay, you know, like credible witnesses, uh-huh, you know, when they talk to people, because, you know, you can look on YouTube and you find some of the craziest whacked out people out there, you know. And I think sometimes that's what the media does too. They, you know, they're not going to take anyone who's a police officer or a lawyer or a doctor. They're going to pick the, you know, the craziest person to give an interview to.
And I'll tell you, you know, and that's a great point. Now, when we created the Jevning Research Group, that's what we seem to attract, are people like police officers and military and like Katie, people with science backgrounds, and Mark Dobbs, you know, some very professional people. Why do you guys think, and this one kind of bugs me, it's like, number one, why do some people, I don't know how many, it can't be a huge percentage, but there's a percentage of people out there that seem to be fairly vocal who want to believe the Forest Friends, interdimensional, UFO, whatever have you, you know, mind speak. And then why do you think those people are so inclined to that particular viewpoint of the subject? And why would the media be more interested in them than the things that we can provide? Jeremiah, what do you think?
You know, because people always gear towards that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like the, I don't know if paranormal is the right word for it.
Do you think it's their perception of the subject in the first place that's the wrong perception, and that just sort of fits what they think about the subject?
I think so, and I think our belief, that they're an apex predator. They can be highly dangerous. You know, I don't think people just don't want to believe that, you know, because they don't want
to. You think they're just sort of hiding?
Absolutely. They don't want to believe that when they go into the woods riding their mountain bike or walking on a trail on a state park or whatever, that these things could be around and could be looking for a meal. You know what I mean? And snag them. Right. They don't want to believe that because it's so far out of their realm. You know what I mean? That they just can't process it, and they don't want to believe it. So the others.
Because we're humans and we can't be exposed to things like that. Nothing
exactly,
will ever happen to
exactly.
us.
Exactly. So
when we know that monsters
right.
are real,
they just want to gravitate towards the other side of it. You know,
so, sort of like being the ostrich,
pretty
putting
much.
Your head in the sand.
Yeah.
Shane, what do you think?
I don't know. I feel like they're kind of like a bunch of wackos. You know, maybe some peyote or LSD or something. I don't know. I mean, how can you not think that there's something tangible that's indigenous to your area, you know, especially if like all the food sources and whatnot are there? I mean, maybe these are the people that think that we've already discovered everything on Earth and the only thing left is interdimensional or whatever, but I mean, Jesus, man, we find new primates every year.
Every year.
Some are big, some are small, some are tall, whatever. I mean, come on.
There's a lot of stuff.
People realize there used to be giant-ass lizards walking on the earth?
Right.
Yeah. Now, Katie, you're a scientist. What do you think?
Look at human nature, there's a tendency to want to explain everything, to have an answer for everything. And if you go back through generations, there's always stories of creation and, you know, for everything that happens around you, there's an explanation. And I think in a desperate bid to find an answer or to solve this thing, I think a lot of people come up with the unknown. So, you know, you answer the unknown with more unknown. And look, it's an easy way out to say, well, oh, I know why he disappeared. It's because he went through a portal, you know?
So it's an incredible subject requiring an incredible
explosion. Well, yeah, I think that's how people take. But I think it's an incredible subject that needs incredible patience. I mean, sit back and open your eyes. Observe what's happening around you. I mean, I do understand how something never leaves the city, and you know their nature is on channel 13. You know, for them to think, well, no, I mean, of course, they're in the middle of the city; they're not going to see certain things. So, yeah, I think also our closed-in, you know, we're certain. I feel like less people get outdoors, and they rely on
right.
electronics and social media things.
Yeah, we're living in this artificial environment
yeah,
we've
yeah.
created, and we're not really in touch with what we, how we got to be where
yeah,
we are.
Exactly. I mean, and like I said, you know, we go back, we're talking about, you know, some of the evidence that's out there. Look, there's a lot of crap. People do a lot of desperate things. But even if, I mean, I look in my, you know, stack of items that I have to look at, and there are things that blow your mind. I mean, like the little infant foot in the snow. You know, if
right
do that. That thing is barely bigger than a cigarette lighter. But their
yeah.
child walking the snow like that in the back country, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a great point. One of our members that's a police officer is taking college courses currently, and he did a paper, and it was a Bigfoot related paper, just to do something different for a particular course he was in, and took a lot of heat from the students. And the professor, in particular, the professor said, well, the reason that the subject can't be real is because, sure, we see pictures of footprints, but we never see juvenile footprints and pictures. So he brought this up to me, and I sent him a whole bunch of pictures of
right.
juvenile footprints, everything from, you know, about 3 inches long up to about 9 or 10 inches long. And the professor had to completely rethink his position on that because, you know, there was, but it's not out in the media. Joe, what do you think?
You know, it's such a difficult something to really grasp how someone doesn't think that these things are just flesh and blood, you know? I don't understand it. You know, it's like, and I've heard everything from like they can jump through wormholes and portals, and they come from another planet, and to feed here, you know. And I'm like, okay, they can create a wormhole, but they can't grow their own crops, you know.
Yeah,
I don't understand that. You know, it just blows my mind in itself. Yeah. You know?
Well, and my point, you know, with that, with people who bring up that particular subject about, you know, the interdimensional stuff and all that, and mind speaking, those two things in particular, I pose the question back: name one other species in the entire history of this planet that had that ability.
Yeah.
Okay. The answer, they can't come up with an answer. There are none. So why would this particular species have that ability when none others did? Not even human beings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's a ridiculous point of view, I think, to think that, you know, just because you can't explain this. Now, there are some legitimate questions. People say, well, okay, if such a thing exists, how come we don't have a body? How come they're, and I get this one all the time, how come they're not seen? Well, we have thousands of people that have seen them. So that's a silly question to ask in the first place. But the other one is, how come we don't have evidence? Well, there is a lot of evidence. They just don't show it. It's not put in the media, ever.
Yep.
Chance, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, there's, I guess I would have a couple different points, you know. For as long as I can remember, you know, the paranormal side, whether it be, you know, some of the more predominant, you know, cryptids, I guess, like Loch Ness, or, you know, UFOs, or, you know, things of that nature, you know, have always been predominant. They've always been, you know, at the forefront of, you know, any type of media, whether it be the news or, you know, what have you. And it almost seems like that's kind of become, you know, the social norm, you know, for explanations, you know, of things that aren't necessarily understood, I guess. And to kind of touch on, you know, what Jeremiah was talking about at the beginning, you know, it's, I think humans, you know, as a whole, you know, we've become so accustomed to being, you know, at the top of the food chain. And, you know, like Jeremiah was saying, it's, you know, it's kind of a hard pill to swallow, you know, accepting that, you know, there's another apex predator that, you know, that, hey, this thing's out there. It's a lot more powerful than me. You know, I'm not the top of the food chain anymore. You know, and it's easier.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things. I think there's a lot of things about the Sasquatch that are frankly on a real primal level with people, very disconcerting. You know, when it comes to the truthful part of this. So, you know, it makes it more palatable when people want to believe this nonsense stuff.
Right.
Instead of actually, you know, what the truth of the matter is. We're going to wrap up here, fellas. Any last thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I got
absolutely.
One.
I mean, it's absolutely.
Okay, let's we'll go around. Katie, what are your thoughts?
You know, I just think that we need to keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, we're doing it seriously, you know, research by protocol. And, the other thing, I think we need to encourage people to come forward so that we, you know, we can continue to one, collect evidence, but also to get the word out and let people know that we are taking it serious, you know?
Yeah.
Shane, how about you?
I'm just glad that I finally have an outlet for what I've been kind of harboring, you know, just the belief in this. And now that, you know, I have, you know, you guys, this team, I'm ready to, like, get out and experience something more for myself. So, you know, when we do these roundtables, I can have more insight and share more genuine thoughts and processes after what I've experienced. So,
yeah,
you know, Jeremiah? kind of going along with Chris was saying, we just need to keep doing what we're doing. I mean, we have a great team. Awesome team. We have a great group of guys. You know, we have, look what we have right here. This is a very talented group. Awesome researchers. You know, we're all really, we're all good buddies. We're tight. You know, we have a great team. And I truly believe, we keep doing what we're doing. You know, we're going to be the group that makes this discovery. You know, we're going to make the biggest discovery, biggest scientific discovery in human history. We just got to keep doing what we're doing. And that's all there is to it.
Right.
Yeah, I would just, encourage, anybody, whether, you're, a long time following, of the group and of Will, or if you're, brand new to the group and all that, if you have any questions, get a hold of any of us on, through the group page on Facebook, message any of us, whether it just be a question or, an encounter you want to share with us, or even if you're interested in, getting into the field and researching and, want to know how to go about it, by all means, please, don't feel like any question is too small. Please get a hold of us.
Yeah. Nice, champ.
I think, really, we just got a great group of guys here, man. We got a great foundation, and like everybody else is saying, man, this is the group to be with, and I think we're going to be the ones to break this thing wide open.
And you guys all make a great point. And for those listening who don't know, excuse me, what the Jevning Research Group is, we have teams currently in 32 states across Canada, Australia, India, England, and Norway, and we're growing all the time. You don't have to be somebody who wants to be, out looking for Bigfoot to belong to the organization. We're looking for people, in all sorts of walks of life. With any sort of involvement you want to be associated with this group, what we're doing right now is we're, of course, in the process of building the teams. And as Katie mentioned, we're using scientific protocols to gather evidence and to move forward with that evidence to develop the proper hypothesis and theories to move forward to eventually be able to prove these things are real. So we're looking for members all the time. And you can go on my website, williamjevning.com, and put the cursor over research teams, and you'll get a drop-down menu. And not all the teams are up there, but there's information for the regional directors. You can get a hold of one of them. Doesn't matter where you are, and they will direct you to the right people in your area. So I encourage you to go up there and look at that. And, of course, this show, if you're listening to it, it's on a number of different platforms. And as Chance said, also, you can contact anybody on our Facebook page, the JRG Bigfoot Research page. So, fellas, I appreciate you coming on and chatting this evening. Great discussion. Everyone, join us again next week for another edition of Bigfoot Notes from the Field. I'm your host, William Jevning. We'll see you again next week.
Take care, guys.